You're listening to Houston's First Baptist Church. For more information, visit us online at houstonsfirst.org. Houston's First Baptist Church, a relevant biblical community. Here's Greg Mott.
We've been talking about the end times is where we were. And I thought about entitling this message, the End Times Letdown Message. Because everybody gets so into end times and then we get to, now we're going to talk about Christian living. Let's talk about beasts coming out of the sea some more. And let's talk about rapture and all these different things. But the purpose of prophecy is godliness. I've been saying that over and over and over, that Paul is leading us to a purpose of prophecy to live out godliness. He wants us to be living. He doesn't want us to just be studying and thinking and debating and wondering. He wants us to be living out our lives. He wants us to have something that's going to be these seeds that then blossoms into this Christian life. Now, this week, I had the first signs of spring happening for us here in Houston. And it was when I walked out to my car, and there my car was. I'd never purchased a yellow car before, but at this point, I now had a yellow car covered with pollen. Now, if you have a garage and you park in a garage all day long, you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you park outside at the beginning of spring, for everybody in Houston, you end up with this yellow film all over your car. It's saying to us that there's light that's going to sprout, that there's something that's going to come. There's flowers that are about to happen. And we have come through this residue, in a sense, of the end times, this covering of a sense in the end times, of Paul walking us through. But what he's saying is, I want living to be blossoming out of this. I want all of this talk of rapture, all of this talk of Jesus coming back, all of this talk of thrones and great white judgments and all these different things that we've been speaking about, that all of that is like a pollen residue that then is to birth into a Christian life. And he's going to start out now and take us through a series called Living. Living. What does it really mean to live? Because the purpose of God, the purpose of prophecy is godliness. It's to give us the wind in our sails to live. Now, how would you start if you were Paul? How would you start out the first new section of scripture of Thessalonians to write to the church of Thessalonica? Well, he's going to start out, I think, in an interesting way. And it's found in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 12 and following. We'll read together verses 12 and 13. Now we ask you, brothers, to respect those who work hard among you. For those who are over you in the Lord and who admonish you, hold them in the highest regard in love. Because of their work, live in peace with each other. Paul comes out of the gate, and the first thing he speaks about after talking about the end times is he talks about authority. Now, do you like authority? Do I like authority? Is there anything in us that we go, I love authority. I want somebody to be the boss. No, most of the time we kind of buckle under authority. We say, well, who are you to tell me? Why are you telling me this or that? Paul starts out, the first thing after end times is saying there's authority that has been placed over your life. There's authority that we're to operate under. And most of us don't like that. I was talking with some guys in the hall, and we were talking about how Nixon, they thought, and then LBJ began the beginning of the downslide of authority, of us respecting government authority in our lives. We don't like authority. We don't want somebody to tell us what to do, but authority is truly for our good. There's a guy on our staff named Chad Hamm, and he's a neat, neat guy. He's in charge of our financial aspects of our church, so we hope to keep him really, really busy in the recession is what we want. We don't want him to get bored, you know, so that we can come out of the debt that we're in to be able to go, or the downward giving that we've been in to take it forward. And so here's Chad, is a great, great guy. Well, he's got a little guy named Nathan that's about 4 years old. Well, Nathan, as all little kids do, got into a little bit of trouble, and it was time for Daddy to spank Nathan. So Daddy, Chad, got Nathan. He took him in his room, and he said, okay, this is what you've done, and he gave him a spanking. Well, Nathan got off of his knee and looked at his daddy with tears in his eyes and said, I want to be the boss. And therein lies the problem, right? That's probably why he got a spanking in the beginning. So he said, I want to be the boss. And Chad wisely said to him, he says, everyone has a boss. And you can't be the boss. Everyone has a boss. He said, well, Daddy, who's your boss? He said, well, Pastor Greg is my boss. He said, no, he's not. David Self is your boss. He said, yeah, but Pastor Greg is David Self's boss. So then Nathan said, so you're saying that Pastor Greg is the big boss? He said, yeah, Pastor Greg's the big boss. And then he thought for a minute. Nathan thought for just a second. He goes, then that means that God's the ginormous boss. He's got it exactly right. God's the ginormous boss. All of us have a boss. Every one of us has a boss. If you're in business for yourself, you're like, I don't have a boss. Your clients and your customers are your boss. If you're the CEO of this big, huge, publicly traded company, well, your stockholders are your boss. If you're the head of the government, then the constituency is your boss. If you look throughout all of life, all of us have a boss. We have parents that are bosses. We have police officers that are bosses. We have government officials that are bosses. Employers that are bosses. We may be the boss of someone else. But everyone has a boss. Even if it gets to the ginormous boss of God, that God is the ultimate boss. Leadership is for our good. Authority is for our good. It allows us to function in our roles properly. We know what part of the team we play on. It helps us to do that. Authority helps things to move forward. If everybody's just waiting for the group consensus, we're going to end up with a popular vote. Nothing's ever going to get done. It's just not going to happen. God is saying that's a good point. Things got to get done. He's type A. Just kidding. He's God. He's type A through Z, whatever he is. Alpha and Omega type, everyone. So now I can preach a little longer because it's pouring down rain. All right. That's good. Everyone has a boss. We all come underneath that. It helps us to function in our roles. It helps things to move forward. It helps to protect us. Everyone has a boss. And if you don't get that and you think, well, the teacher's not my boss, then you say the principal's not my boss, then you say the superintendent's not my boss, then you say on and on it goes that so-and-so else is not my boss, that the police aren't my boss, the judge isn't my boss, the warden isn't my boss is finally where it's going to end up. Because at that moment, you've seen that authority has been shirked all the way through. Everyone is a boss. There's a new concept that we need to get back to, an old concept. The teacher's the boss. The principal's the boss. And kids have to learn that. Parents, students are your boss. Now, students ask this all the time, well, when do I get to be the boss? Here's as clear as I can put it. Your ability to be the boss is directly connected with how much you pay for your life financially. If you pay for 50% of all the things that you do, you are 50% the boss. If you pay for everything except for college and your parents pay for college, your parents are the boss of your college experience. They're the boss of the apartment that you live in. They're the boss of whatever else. When you are 100% your boss, you'll have another boss, but in the parenting realm, when you're 100% your boss will be when you pay 100% of your bills. And as long as you're not paying 100% of your bills and your bossness are directly related. And if they're paying 100% of your bills, they're 100% of your boss, whether you like it or not. And if the kids don't believe that and they don't like that, parents give them a bag of groceries and a month's rent and your phone number and say, call me when it hits. Because life has a board for every bottom. Think about that. Life has a board for every bottom. Every one of us will learn some things from life that we could not learn from authority. And when we buck it and we say, I don't want it, I don't want it, life will strike a straight lick to straighten the crooked stick. Because all of us encounter that as we go through. So Paul is saying everyone has a boss. Everyone has a boss. Well, what kind of leaders should we follow? What kind of leaders should we follow? Well, it gives us that. This is what it is. Highly regarded leaders are respectable, hardworking, godly truth tellers. Highly regarded leaders are respectable, hardworking, godly truth tellers. He puts it like this: respect those who work hard among you, who are over you in the Lord, godly, and who admonish you, tell you the truth. When we look to leaders and we say, okay, am I going to follow? Am I going to go in that direction? We've got to look and say, is there a highly regarded leader? A highly regarded leader is going to be godly. A highly regarded leader is going to be a truth teller. He's going to be hardworking. She's going to be hardworking. Whatever it is, there's going to be those aspects. So when we look into the political realm, yes, we look for policy, but we're also looking for character. And we have too often separated in our culture today. Well, if I can shoot a basketball, I can be a thug. If I can be a great politician, then I can be a cheat. If I can be a great businessman, then I can be a thief and a liar. It is not the way it works. Character and leadership and greatness must go together. The Protestant Reformation, Martin Luther often gets all the credit for the Protestant Reformation, but it's really basically three hits on the beachhead. The first one was John Wycliffe. You've heard of Wycliffe Bible translators. The next one was Huss, was the next guy. And then finally Luther came through. Well, Wycliffe's story was this, or his grievance was this. The church had become corrupt. And in its corruption, he said, if you are a spiritual leader, you must also be a spiritual person. Now we say, duh, of course. But in those days, you could pay and you could say, I want to be the bishop. I want to be the this. I want to be the that. And my brother-in-law could put me in on it. Or I could pay the money for it. And I could end up, so you had this corruption in the church because you had people that their leadership and their character was disconnected. And he said, no. If you're going to be a spiritual leader, you have to be a spiritual person. They liked this thought so much that he died. And after he died, I think it was 40-something years after he died. I sure could be wrong. But it was years after he died. They exhumed his body and then burned him at the stake. Leadership and character are inseparable. Now, of course, we follow leaders that aren't believers that are within our government, and that's fine. That's okay. God has set up government. But we are to look and to say, is this highly regarded leader, is it a person that is godly, a truth teller, hardworking, someone that we can truly follow? See, Paul begins and he says, I want you right after the end times, I want you to submit yourself underneath this authority of this leadership. Because if you'll submit yourself there, then things will go well for you. It's for your good. To say, yes, sir, no, ma'am, yes, ma'am. It's good to obey the police. It's good to obey the teachers. It's good to obey your parents. It's the right thing. But then he transitions and he says this phrase, in the Lord, those who are over you in the Lord. He's talking about spiritual leadership as well. See, respecting earthly leadership is a fact. Respecting spiritual leadership is a choice. Respecting earthly leadership is a fact. The police, you got to respect them, right? Or you go to jail. You got to respect your boss on earth or you're going to get fired. Respecting spiritual leadership is a choice. See, when we mature in our spiritual lives, it's when we are humble enough, wise enough to put ourselves underneath spiritual authority so that we say, you know what? I want to go to that Bible study and I'm going to sit with my pen and my pad and I'm going to have my Bible open and I'm going to look and I'm going to say, tell me something. I want to know. Not, what are you going to say now? We get in relationships where somebody says, can I speak some truth into your life? And you go, yes. The wounds of a friend are better than the kiss of an enemy. I want to know, what is it? Tell me the blind spot. No one has done me more harm than me to myself. Please help me identify the blind spot. And we are able to have a spiritual authority that we sit under. It's when we say, you know what, God has orchestrated the home, and so I might not agree with my husband right now, but in that, I want to be underneath his authority, and I want to say, God, would you bless this obedience? I don't agree with my parents right now. I think 11:30 is better than 10:30, but right now, I'm going to go a whole lot further if I just say, yes, sir. Can I make a suggestion as opposed to, are you kidding me and flying off the handle? When we choose to submit ourselves under spiritual authority, we are choosing a mature route of our Christianity. And God begins to bless that. And he begins to show and to move in our lives wisdom and humility that comes further and further into our hearts. Now, as I've been preparing this all week long, I've been worried that this would somehow seem like a self-serving message, that this is me trying to get you to listen to me as pastor. I feel highly respected within here. No one's giving me any grief. This isn't the moment where I've been like, oh, yeah, wait till I get to 1 Thessalonians 5, buddy, and I'll show you. That's not that at all. It's saying, though, that if you will allow me and the rest of the staff, if you'll allow us to pastor you, we will pray, we will seek, we will lead, and we will try to take all of us to grass that is green and worthy to be eaten. And when I say that, it's not some type of pastoral perk. This isn't like this power trip, oh, great, I get to be the pastor, this is great. It is a responsibility. It says in James, let not many of you become teachers, for you will be held more accountable. There is a responsibility that happens when you pastor people, when you lead people. And I feel that weight of responsibility. I do not see it as a perk. I do not see it as a power deal. I see it as a vast responsibility. Sometimes I start praying on my knees in my office and I end up on my face before God to say, Lord, as it said in the Old Testament, who can lead such a great people? I believe it was Solomon that said that. Father, give me your wisdom. And so in this, in our church as well, we have to be able to say, we want to come under that teaching. We want to be able to be people that submit and say, okay, teach us, lead us. All through the Bible, you see God calling a man and leading the people out. He calls Moses, he calls Paul, he calls Timothy, he calls Joshua. He calls all these men. He doesn't call a committee. He calls a man. And then the man begins to lead out. And then people come around in wise counsel and they begin to lead forward. What we say around here, the way that things best work, kind of the nuts and bolts of it, is that in our church, we're staff led, deacon served, committee reviewed, congregation approved. Okay, I'll say that again. Staff led that God has equipped, given, and here we are as staff to try to lead and say, I think we need to do this, and I think we need to do that, and we need to do these sort of things, and praying and seeking in that. And then the deacons serve. That word deacon means servant, and they are a great group of guys. I love our deacons. We got a great match between pastor and staff and deacons. They're awesome. And so in there, they're serving in all different places and serving and giving wisdom and knowledge. And I ask them often, what do y'all think? And how does this look? And what is God maybe doing this? And they give wise counsel with other leaders in the church. And then so we're deacon served. And then now we're committee reviewed. We've got teams and committees that look over things and say, okay, well, what if we did this? And what if we did that? And so we get this wise counsel because I believe that none of us is as smart as all of us. None of us is as smart as all of us. And then finally, congregation approved. When it gets to a really big kind of thing, we say, congregation, what do you think? Should we go into a capital campaign for $20 million? Yes. Should we do this? Yes. And then it works out. We have this balance of all these things. It slows down the process sometimes, but it makes the process more healthy. So far, in these 5 years that I've been here, almost 5 years, it's amazing that it's been that long already. There's nothing that I can think of that the Lord has laid on our heart as a church that we haven't been able to do. And at the same time, there's nothing that I can think of that we've done in the quickness that I thought we would get it done. Because when you include people, you begin to slow the thing down and you move it forward. But you move it forward in wisdom, and that's a good thing. So it's not some trip of power. It's not some perk. It is a time to be able to say, this is a responsibility. When I first got here, I just kind of was like, well, what do y'all want? What y'all would say, well, what do you want us to call you? Brother Greg or you know, Reverend Greg, or what do you want to be? And I said, Greg's just fine. Greg's just fine. What I found was our church had been so healthily built in respecting the pastor that you guys needed that title, Pastor Greg. It just didn't feel right. It needed to be at least coach, you know, something, I mean, put out there. So Pastor Greg fits, and I've grown into that, and I received that, and that's an honor, and that's a blessing. So it's not some power trip type thing. It's not some I'm the man type of deal. Most of the time, everybody says, your pastor's so little and cute. He's just so sweet. I meet people, and they say, well, you look smaller in person. And it's kind of like, I feel like they're saying, you know, you're pretty for an ugly person. You know, I don't really know how to take that. You look really nice today. You usually don't, but today you do. What's the deal? See, you look bigger in person or smaller in person. I said, it's because my head's like 15 feet tall on this screen that y'all are watching me on. So it's not some power trip type thing. It's just being able to walk through and to say, if we will choose to place ourselves under spiritual leadership, not just me as the pastor, staff, other people that you're in Bible study with, people that you love and trust, then that choice will take you through. And what will happen, follow me on this, you will then be able to see growth happen in your life. See, what happens is this, as we talk about living, we come over here, and in the springtime that we're coming before the temperature dropped back to winter this week, we're able to kind of get our gardening stuff going. And so we get our gloves out, and God starts saying, okay, I want to turn up some fallow ground. I want you to be a part of what's happening here in God's world and in the church and all these different things. And then he says, I want to take a few seeds. And I want to take these seeds and I want to plant these seeds. And as I plant these seeds, we're planting these seeds of understanding earthly leadership. and understanding spiritual leadership and authority, and to be able to say, you know what, I know it doesn't work right now, you don't seem like it with your husband, but if you put that seed in, it's going to blossom. I know with your parents right now, it's tough, but if you put that seed in, it'll blossom. I know right now, you don't want to hear biblical truth. But if you'll receive it, it'll blossom. And in that, we spade the ground and get it ready. And as that happens, then we'll see in coming weeks a harvest. Because what happens is this seed begins to be planted. And then we'll see in these next verses, Paul's going to say, plant these seeds of understanding authority. And then you'll see a blossoming in your life. Let's look and see what happens in Paul's view here. Here it's found in the next verse. Bible will always give you your outline. Verse 14. And why? Because they're under spiritual authority. And we urge you, brothers. 21 times it's used in the books of Thessalonians, brothers. Brothers, warn them, warn those who are idle. Encourage the timid. Help the weak and be patient with everyone. Make sure that no one repays wrong for wrong, but always try to be kind to each other and everyone else. He says, if you'll plant these seeds, then you'll begin to have a ministry of your own. What will your ministry be? Your ministry will begin to be these things. So what we say is this, growing under spiritual leadership becomes giving out of spiritual wisdom. God can't use you as a leader until he's taught you how to be a follower. God can't use you as a leader until he's taught you how to be a follower. We have to be followers of the ginormous boss. And as we follow the ginormous boss, then we're able to lead others. We have to be followers of the bosses God's put over us. And as he put those bosses over us, we follow and we say, yes, no, on we go. And we follow, and then that godly leadership, we follow in a way that then we begin to give out spiritual leadership, spiritual wisdom. So when do we not need to follow leadership? Here it is. If a leader ever asks you to do something illegal, immoral, or unbiblical, don't do it. Illegal, immoral, unbiblical, don't do it. Because those are crossing lines now with your theology of saying, you know what, I got a ginormous boss, and I'm going to follow him. But on other things, we follow. And then as we follow, we're able to give out. It says the first thing is warn the idle. Warn the idle. God hits moving targets. God hits moving targets. I'm going to sit in my house, and I'm going to wait. I'm not going to do my resume. I'm not going to go any job interviews. I'm going to wait until I get a job. You're going to wait a long time. I'm going to sit in my dorm room, and I'm going to wait till that cute college girl comes along, and she knocks on the door and says, I'm your wife. Just FYI, if that ever happens, run. She is not your wife, okay? She is weird and desperate is what she is. Run. At this moment, you don't just sit here. You brush your teeth, you comb your hair, guys, you put on a nice shirt, and you go and you say, well, I wonder where godly women would be. And you begin to try to meet one, and godly ladies the same way. Only thing you have to decide on date one is there date two? That's all that's got to be decided. And so in this, God hits moving targets. We get out there and we share our faith, and then people come to Christ. We get out there and we serve, and then we see some weaknesses that we have and we grow. We get out there and we go for it. God hits moving targets. Warn the idle. Warn the idle. We are all way too idle. All way too idle. Three areas in which we're too idle. Number one, physically. Number two, financially. And number three, spiritually. Number one, physically. We are way too idle physically. Now, I know you're looking at me, and I could eat chips and queso for breakfast and Thin Mints for lunch and hot dogs for dinner, and at least right now while I'm under 40, it doesn't affect my weight in the least, okay? I know my metabolism, so you can throw eggs at me later type of thing. But here's what I want you to know. Every one of us should be physically active and should be eating right. Every one of us. Your personality doesn't define that you get to not eat right and not exercise. Being physically active makes a difference, and we're way too idle. We're watching a bunch of TV instead of doing anything about our physique and our body and keeping this temple the way that it should. I tell my son all the time, when he asks for more TV, more computer, more video games, I say, TV makes you dumb. Well, no, it doesn't. What if you're watching the History Channel? Well, most of us are watching Dancing with the Stars, okay? So If you're watching the History Channel, God bless you, and you're getting smarter. But most of us are watching Dancing with the Stars, and TV makes you dumb. It makes you dumb. So physically, we need to get off the couch of watching the TV and going for it and get out there running or doing or whatever you like to do and eating right so that physically we're not idle. Financially, we need to not be idle. We need to realize, as we said many times, we give first, we save next. And then after that, we fear debt and we pay our bills. And then finally, we enjoy. But if we just sit back, it's not going to work like that. We have to be out there. We have to be working. We have to be trusting and giving and saving and investing and all of those things and staying out of debt. Don't buy things you can't afford. If you can't afford it, you don't need it. You'll be just fine. Then finally, spiritually, we need to be disciplined in our spiritual life. Now, discipline, a lot of times in our spiritual life, we take a bad connotation. Well, I don't want to have some rules. I'm not talking about rules. We're talking about connectors. I spend time with the Lord every morning and every night, through the day as well, obviously, with what I do. But every morning and every night, I have a quiet time. I spend time reading a devotional guide or my Bible and praying. The maturity of your Christian life will be marked by this: when you begin to spend time with God every day. You'll never be a mature Christian until you spend time with God every day. It just won't happen. I've seen it in my own life. I've watched it in others. We have to be disciplined to be able to connect with God and say, Lord, we want to be able to do that. Warn the idol. Warn the idol. You know, there's a lot of idols, a lot of warnings that we have on all of our products because people are scared of getting sued. I want to give you six ones that are kind of funny. One was on a bottle of shampoo for dogs, and this is what it said. Caution, the contents of this bottle should not be fed to fish. Shampoo for dogs. Warning, this product can burn eyes on the box of a curling iron. On a toner cartridge for a laser printer, do not eat toner. Interesting. On a 13-inch wheel for a wheelbarrow, it said, not intended for highway use. Important to remember. Two more. On a birthday card for a one-year-old, not suitable for children age 36 months or less. You have to think about it. 12 months is a year, 36 months is older than that. Number six, finally, on a stroller for a child, remove occupants before folding the stroller. Pointless, crazy warnings. And Paul screams out through all of time, don't be idle. And Proverbs 10:4 says, the lazy hands make a man poor, but the diligent hands bring wealth. Proverbs 20, verse 4, a sluggard does not plow in season, so at harvest he looks but finds nothing. Proverbs 20, verse 13, do not love sleep or you will grow poor. Stay awake and you will have food to spare. Warn the idol is the first part of our ministry. Number two on that, encourage the timid. Encourage the timid. There are folks that want to, but are afraid to. They want to, but they're afraid to. I told a church member a while back, I looked him in the eye and I said, you know what? I see in you bravery. Wow. Be specific. Be sincere. I really meant it. And I saw that just, whoa. If we'll get a specific and sincere compliment from the right person, you'll be able to live off it for a month, is what Mark Twain says. A specific, sincere, not ambiguous flattery. Specific, sincere, and it says, I want you to encourage the timid. Timid in the Greek literally means small-souled. I want you to encourage the small-souled. They want to, but they're afraid to. I think there's many of you in this room, you want to be involved, you're just afraid to be involved. Last week I said we needed 107 people to volunteer in the preschool ministry. You know how many people signed up? 172 signed up. Amazing. Amazing. We want to be that kind of church. We want to step out and be that kind of church. In your bulletin every week, right over here on this little side by the tear-off deal, it says right here, volunteer. It's always got places. If you're timid, jump in. If you don't know where your spiritual gift is, we'll help you find it. Go to our website and you'll find our spiritual gifts test. It's called Place. It's free. Go there this afternoon and click on that and take a spiritual gifts test, and then we'll help you get involved. If you're timid, you know you want a sermon. Oh, I'd love to, but I don't know if I'll be able to, and I'm not good at it. Step out. God hits moving targets. We don't want you to be perfect. You'd intimidate the rest of us if you were. God wants us to encourage the timid. And number three, and finally, he says, be patient with everyone from top to bottom. Be patient with everyone from top to bottom. It says in that in the end of verse 14, be patient with everyone. And then it says, make every effort that no one repays wrong for wrong. In the Greek, it says, strongly make sure that no one pays back wrong for wrong, but try to be kind to each other and to everyone else. He says this, I want you to be a person that steps out and you encourage people, but you do it in a way that you realize, be patient with everyone from top to bottom. Be patient with your husband. Be patient with your children. Be patient with your employer. Be patient with your employees. Be patient with your government. Be patient with your neighbors. Be patient with your pastor and the staff. Be patient with those that you're leading in a Bible study. Be patient. And if we will practice the practice patience, we will find that retribution and revenge will go right away from our life. If we'll be patient, we'll be kind, then revenge will come out of our lives. See, God wants us to sit under spiritual authority to admonish one another. That word admonish means to biblically direct, to be able to say, don't do this, do this. If we just say don't, then we're just given verbal disapproval. But when we admonish, we say don't and do. And when that happens, the spiritual authority is over your life, and then you begin to have a ministry, because you can't truly lead until you follow. Close with this illustration. Queen Victoria was married to Prince Albert. They got in a little tiff in the palace. And there they were in this little bit of a tiff in the palace. And Prince Albert got upset. And so he got up and he left and he walked out of the room. And he went to his private quarters and he closed the door and he locked the door. The queen walked over there. She knocked on the door. He said, who is it? She said, it's the Queen of England. And he left the door locked. And she knocked a little bit more gently. He said, who is it? She said, it's your wife, Albert. And he opened up the door. See, even the queen, for the marriage to work, had to realize that God had put in place the home. And until you're a follower, you can't truly be a leader. And Paul has given us some pollen of the end times to show us where true living really is. And true living is when the flowers begin to blossom in spring. How do you feel about authority? How does that strike you? Do you then have a ministry from that attitude? No. You have a ministry from the attitude that says, God, you're my ginormous boss, and I just want you to use me.